This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
In late September 2015, writer Christopher Pollan and photojournalist Ben Nelms paddled the 83-kilometer stretch of the Peace River that will be destroyed by the Site C Dam Reservoir. For 4 days, they traveled through rich wildlife habitat, camping on islands and sandbars in a valley that is home to trappers, farmers, and ranchers. They concluded their trip by touring through the same stretch on land, interviewing and photographing the people who live on the banks of the Peace. The Peace in Peril was published this week by Harbor Publishing. Author Christopher Pollan joins me by phone this morning. Hello, Christopher.
Hello, good morning.
Now, why did you decide to take this journey?
Well, you know, I cover commodities as a journalist, and I've always been fascinated in particular with energy, the degree to which it's such an important aspect of every waking moment of our lives, but it's so taken for granted. And I found the Peace River and its history of hydro particularly interesting in the sense that we already get about a third of our energy from this river system. But, you know, when I started out my research on this, I couldn't point out the Peace on a map. So there was this out-of-sight, out-of-mind sort of aspect that I found intriguing, and I felt like I really needed to know more about it. And I also think British Columbians need to learn a little bit more about it, too.
Now, you are a journalist, but you say on this journey you kind of felt a little bit like an anthropologist. Can you explain that to me?
Well, you know, a lot of my favorite historical books were actually written by anthropologists who, you know, going down stretches of river, documenting what's there, almost for posterity. And with the idea that this stretch of river was in short order to be erased from the face of the earth felt almost like we were documenting something that was going to be gone soon. And I make allusions to, in my introduction even to the book, you know, books I loved like Deliverance by James Hickey. And you know, again, there was that same atmosphere created by paddling a section of river there's something intriguing about the fact that it's a sacrifice zone and that you're there to document it, maybe at least in the way that we did it for the last time.
Now, you paddled the section below the WAC Bennett and Peace Canyon dams. How do those dams affect the river currently?
Well, two answers to that. You know, the impacts have not been really well documented and known outside of the Peace region itself. In the book, I document, and this was complete news to me, that the stories of the First Nations people who were flooded out by the what became the Williston Reservoir, which a massive lake, the largest artificial lake or lake, freshwater lake in British Columbia, and the impacts were felt very, very strongly within the Peace region. But what's interesting is that the impacts outside of the Peace have been amazingly positive for British Columbia. But, you know, if there was one surprise paddling the river, it was that in spite of the existence of the two dams already on that river system, the Peace River remains an absolute nursery of abundance. And I have anecdotes that Ben captured in his photographs. Like, there's 60 photographs in this book. So it's a visual record as well as a written record. There were moments on that river where we were absolutely spellbound by the abundance that we witnessed, whether it was fish, birds, bears, elk, moose. Like, just, it's an amazing place, and it remains an amazing place in spite of the impacts of creating an artificial watershed from the WAC Bennett Dam that's basically the size of Ireland.
The photographs in the book are gorgeous.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things, if there was one thing that I was, one of the things I was happiest about with the fact that Harper Publishing was excited about publishing a lot of photos. So like I said, not only are there Ben's color photography and his landscapes and everything else, we captured it in autumn, which is probably the most beautiful time to be on that river, because the colors of the just hug that river are just amazing. But also, I was also able to indulge myself with historical photographs as well. So every step of our journey is documented both not only in present photographs but in historical photographs as well. So the visual aspect of the book is something I'm really happy about.
Now, at the same time you're describing and showing photographs of this magical place, you also recount what happened to the same river valley upstream when the Williston Reservoir started to fill as a really chilling account of what happened. Let's talk just first of all about the land itself. What happened to that area?
Right. What happened was... And again, it's little-known history that when the flooding started for the W.A.C. Bennett Dam, the First Nations people that lived along that section of the river and had lived along there for millennia, most of them weren't aware of what was coming. And what happened was the waters rose, the flooding happened faster than B.C. Hydro intended. So you have these human impacts where it's essentially the end of the world for these people. And what another thing that that another aspect of the dam and the flooding was that most of the timber, and we're talking a practically inconceivable amount of forest that was they weren't able to pre-log. There was just too much of it. The space was too big. So what happened was when you create that reservoir, when you flood it, it became like a giant aquatic log jam. So First Nations people. Not only were they flooded out, but when they were moved to the edge of the new reservoir lake, accessing the river, which they relied on for transportation and for so much of their subsistence, was just not even possible, or it was absolutely dangerous. Now, we talked to a lot of people in the valley of the section that's going to be flooded, and virtually all the people we talked to have family or relatives or know people that had lost land or trapping territories or just fishing areas from that dam. So the memory of W.A.C. Bennett Dam, like the impacts of it, are forgotten elsewhere, probably never even known elsewhere, but remain very fresh in mind for people there that are now facing Site C.
Well, I was fascinated with that section of your book because we have covered the issues around Site C Dam extensively on our show, and yet there was information there that I had never heard. For example, you said that the first winter after the W.A.C. Bennett Dam, after the lake formed, the dam lowered the water surface by 9 meters, exposing the lake bottom, and that created massive dust storms. And I'd never heard that before.
Well, you know what's interesting is that, and disturbing, obviously, is that I met with some of the Sekou Dene people that... the survivors of this episode of history. And they told me when I brought up the dust storms, because I wanted to confirm that that was an impact of the time, and they told me that they still live with those dust storms. Like, this history hasn't ended for them. And one point I want to make about the First Nations there, and this blew me away, and I think it's absolutely shameful, is that the two First Nations that exist in that area that have been relocated to new locations, their villages are off the grid. They subsist on dirty, expensive diesel generation. And to think that they lost their homeland so that British Columbia could have energy for our industry and for our quality of life, and these people, the only power line going through the Sekou Dene territory is a power line that was built to power a mine in the headwaters of the Finley River. So they can do it for mining, but they couldn't do it for them. It's astounding history.
So they have dirty, expensive power.
Right. They have they ship in diesel fuel, and they burn it in diesel generators for their electricity.
Where did you go when you got off the river?
We ended our trip at Taylor, which is just south of Fort St. John. And so then what we did was we did kind of a roundabout way of doing it, but we backtracked basically from Fort St. John, that area, back towards Hudson's Hope, which is where we started. We went through that riparian area, the river area, and we reached out just to whoever we could talk to, whoever was going to be affected by this.
What do local farmers there in that valley say about BC Hydro's assessment of the agricultural value of the land that's going to be flooded there?
Well, I think BC Hydro's position was that the land was underutilized and that there was very little real farming taking place, which is true, which is a fact. But what's complicated about that is you have to keep in mind that Site C is not a new project. BC Hydro has been buying up parcels of land from landowners for decades. So if land's underutilized, for one, it's because BC Hydro has bought a lot of the land, and they do lease it back or lease it back to some farmers. But in my experience there, the only people seriously doing farming were people like Ken and Arlene Boone, who had inherited their land, and they'd been there for three generations, and they were hell-bent they weren't going to stop.
Now, in the introduction, you say you embarked on the journey to document a doomed landscape, not wanting to get into the politics of the project. Did that change for you as you learned more about Site C?
Well, you know, you can only stay detached so long. Our initial ambition, like it says in the intro, was to make like anthropologists and just document what was there before it was gone. But you know what happened was the way I approached the book was when I returned to Vancouver, I started writing and then I started interviewing and I started doing research to fill in the travel log, because the book's structured as a travel log, but I filled in a lot of words after I came back. And I started talking to people who from multiple areas who had studied the dam, particularly through the joint review panel process, the environmental review process, all of that. And a picture started to emerge of a project which at least in the timeline that BC Hydro has put forward for needing this power, it looks like we don't need it in those timelines, which is a concern when you consider what is at stake in this valley.
You also mention a concern with the economics of the dam.
So the dam, including contingency, $400 million contingency, is about $8.8 billion. And what's a concern about that, not only that it's escalated over the decades, is that, I'll give you an example. I had reached out to there's researchers at Oxford University who in 2013 did this study. And what they did was they looked at about 250 really big hydro dams. And they looked at them across 65 countries. So you've got developed countries, you've got undeveloped countries. They did the whole wide gamut of it. And what they did was they looked at the initial cost estimates, and then they looked at the final cost of the dams. And they found that on average, the final cost of all of those dams, on average, were 90% higher than what they had sold to the people who were basically paying for it. Which in this case, in the case of Site C, is the ratepayers of British Columbia, who are, just simply put, the customers of BC, of the utility, which are you and I.
Well, Christopher, I think it's an essential read on the project, and it's also a very beautiful book, so I want to congratulate you on that.
Well, thanks so much. I enjoy talking to you.
I've been speaking with Christopher Pollan. He's author of The Peace in Peril, published this month by Harbor Publishing, and the book includes many photographs by Ben Helms.